Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And here we are with Iceman Insights on the Amusement Park 96.9 WYIR, joined in studio, not only with a studio audience today, but also with the one and only senior writer and webmaster of IcemanManiacs.com, Michael Shockley. How are you doing today, Shocker?
Fantastic. I am enjoying all the snow outside.
Isn't it beautiful? It's like a Christmas miracle.
It is. It's wonderful.
So, we've had the last few weeks on the road. We've been really impressed with how the Icemen have played, playing a lot of 500 hockey. Last week, 0-2-1 on the road, but we were both relatively happy with it. They had a couple of call-ups and everything else. Then they come home, they lose Friday night to Trenton. They escape with a victory Saturday night. And isn't it funny that we get 2 points in two games and we're probably less happy about it than getting 1 point in three road games?
Yeah. I think it was just the way the team played on Friday kind of left a sour taste in everybody's mouths because they looked flat. Trenton looked like the faster, more skilled team. They trailed 2-0 and 3-1. They did come back to tie at 3-3, which was good. But then they fell apart at the end and gave up three unanswered in the third, including an empty netter. So 6-3 loss. It's always tough when you lose by three at home, especially after having more or less a full week off to prepare for the game. And then you come in with high expectations and turn around and lay an egg like that. It was rough. But at least they salvaged a decent weekend out of it with a win on Saturday. They tried their darndest to give that one away, but they managed to hold on. So 2 points out of four, we'll take that. That's not bad.
I think my biggest frustration was that first period Friday night was just horrible. You can call it, and I'm not, anyone can call it what they want. We all saw it with our own eyes. Were they flat? Were they not inspired? Were they on their heels? But they battled back, and they tie the game up 3-3, and then Trenton turns around. I don't have the official stat, but I think it was in, like, the next minute. They went right back down the ice and scored and took it 4-3, and that just kind of, like, deflated everything right there, including myself in the stands.
Yeah, it was you thought for a second there was a glimmer of hope that at the very least we might get to overtime and get a point out of the game. But then, the floodgates opened after we tied it. And I don't know. It was almost as if the team expended everything they had just to get back to even and then had nothing left and Trenton put them away. Part of the problem in that game was the penalty kill was awful. We talked last week about how good the PK has been, but on Friday it was bad. Officially, the PK was 3-for-8. Allowed 3 power play goals on 8 chances, but it was essentially 3-for-6 because 2 of the 8 power play chances that Trenton had were because of a double minor that Ponich got with 1 second left in the game. So that really doesn't
did he take one for counts. The he took one for the team there just to reinforce the statistics.
Well, the comment on the asylum was that he knew he was going to be getting called up, so he just decided to have some fun before he left town. But yeah, the PK struggled. The power play was 1-for-3, and speaking of Ponich, he did get time on the power play on Friday. He was back on the point with Matt Jens, so, and they did score a power play goal with him out there, so that was good. But it was tough. I thought maybe it was just that they were depressed because of the moment of silence before the game. It took them off their thing. I mean, it was really nice. The Icemen wore Sandy Hook Elementary stickers on their helmets, and they did a 26-second moment of silence, and it was really, really well done and really nice, but not exactly an uplifting and happy and energetic way to start the evening, and it seemed like it kind of took the air out of the building because the announced attendance was over 4,000, and it didn't look like 4,000, but it definitely didn't sound like 4,000. It was one of our deadest crowds of the season, so it's like the whole building was just lacking energy on Friday, including the players on the ice.
I did not notice that because for the first time in my two-year Ford Center history, I was invited into one of the suites.
Really?
Oh, my gosh.
Nice.
Friend of mine who works for Vectren set me up in the Vectren suite with the, you know, his family and everyone else. And, oh, dude, they are the best seats in the house. They are, as they're supposed to be, but they are. And I always like to be a little bit above the ice level. I like to look down because I like to watch. I don't care much as about the banging and the players as much as
you can
the
see
flow of the
develop
game.
Much better from up high.
And, but you've got the best of both worlds. You are close enough. You're just above the lower bowl that you can see the players super well and how big they are and the hits, but you've got just the perfect angle that you can still get some of that development in the plays. And they're comfortable and there's food and it is awesome.
Is the food good?
Actually, we didn't know we were getting the suite, so we ate dinner
beforehand.
And I think I had like a healthy choice clam chowder soup, and then I show up and there's
a buffet.
Yeah, exactly. And my wife did nibble on some of it and said it was pretty good. And I watched Bill Nadeau, rink manager of Swander, just pound ridiculous amounts of food, so it must have been really good.
Well, I don't know that really says anything, Bill eating a lot of food.
Yeah, but so I could care less about the rest of the crowd. You know, whenever I show up, I like to go around and visit everybody at intermission, and I like to sit with my man Troy Siebert whenever I can, or Troy Seibert. But, dude, I was not leaving that suite.
I don't blame you one bit. Yeah, that would be fun.
Thinking about Friday night, Aaron Miller, I'm not sure if it was before or during the game or after the game, one of the Maniac Asylum and Faniacs, but he posted, what did he say? What do you think of
Crom's system, puck possession system
now? And it's a great question. We've gone back and forth on Facebook and everything else, and he is not a big fan of Rich Crom in the system. But that is...
And you're in Crom's pocket.
Yes, I... Heck yeah, I am. Whatever I got to do to get Jerome Ginla in this uniform, I will do.
And sleeping on your couch.
Well, yeah.
You just want a Ginla in your house. That's a little creepy.
That goes without saying. But you have to look at this team, and I think you hit on it first, is we all had high expectations. You know, here they come back from the road. They get a week of practice. Both games at home. We're all excited about this homestand. And then, boy, they got their tires blown off of them in that first period. And they just looked bad.
Yeah.
And is it a talent thing? Is it a coaching thing? We all have to make those. It's a fun thing about being a fan is to look at a team and make those decisions. You know, what would I do different if I was a coach or if I was a GM? So it's a good question out there for the Asylum is, you know, what do you think? Is it a coaching thing? Is it a system thing? Is it a Todd Robinson leadership thing, or is it a lack of talent?
Yeah, and I don't know really on any of those levels how many conclusions you can draw based on Friday, because Friday was just one of those games where you could tell from the get-go the team was just off. And sometimes even the best teams just have an off night. And sometimes you just have to chalk it up as a bad game and move on, because you can dwell on it and try to fix things. And yeah, you can learn some things, but when you have a game like that, you can't let it consume you, because it's the same team that's won games. It's the same team that turned around and won on Saturday. So there's only so much you can take out of them. And maybe it's a little bit of the system. Maybe it was the roster decisions that were made, which we'll get to. But I don't know that one game specifically can really shine a whole lot of light on any major issue like that.
And I know we're getting close to the halfway point, and you've done it before on IcemanManiacs.com, you know, asking everyone to give their grades at the half season mark. So I don't want to steal that. We'll definitely get into that in about 10 more games. But just looking at the season, you know, this team has got the second worst winning percentage in the league.
Yeah.
And you throw out October and we're playing 500 hockey, but it's still only 500 hockey.
Yeah.
And my opinion is I still think we don't have the talent that this team will have next year. And by my count, we're 0-4 before Saturday night without Sebastian Wanstrom and Warren McLeod, which were two guys that I just thought...
Wade.
Or Wade McLeod.
Yeah.
Well, it was only inevitable for my first screw up. But
yeah, we haven't gotten to the schedule yet.
Yeah, exactly. We're 0-4 without them, and then of course we win Saturday night. But and then part of it too, you know, Aaron Miller not being a proponent of Crom or his system, is Crom's system affected by the lack of talent, or is the talent on this team being diminished because
by
of Crom's system?
Right, yeah.
So, you know,
the chicken or the egg.
Exactly. So, good debate to have, I think. A fun debate to have.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, the thing is, you mentioned how bad October was, and then November was better, and December so far has been even better. Even with the disappointing Friday, we bounced back with a win on Friday or on Saturday. We're still 5-3-2 in December. So, at least you're still seeing growth over time. October was awful. November was decent. December, it's not great, but it's better than November was so far. So at least you're seeing some sort of progress. And I think it would be even more frustrating if we were seeing the team plateau at mediocre or even regress. But so far, I don't think we've seen that. It's been a little bit of a rough stretch lately, but still, we're above 500. Or, well, yeah, we're above 500 in points in December. We've won 5 out of 10, so we've won half of our games. And as far as points percentage, we're above 500. So the way the season started, I think you would take that if you were offered that a month ago. So it certainly could be worse.
Oh, definitely. And I think it, you know, it all goes back to the first of the season and expectations. And, you know, if you expected this team to compete for the championship, you've got to be disappointed.
Right.
And you have to ask yourself, is it because of the system and staff that the Icemen have put together, or is it my expectations that were too high? So, and we'll break that down at the end of the season as well.
Right. And you had low expectations.
I
so
do.
You're not really disappointed.
No,
at all.
Not at all.
This is more or less what you thought we would be.
Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, you see the Wade McLeods and the Sebastian Wanstroms, and you're just like, you just see how they change the game mm-hmm. on the ice. And you just think, oh, you get, and then you see a Dylan Clark and a Nathan Moon, and these guys aren't veterans.
Yeah.
And you just get excited that, oh, you know, Crom's going to spend a year in this ECHL. He's going to see a ton of talent.
He's going to
exactly
get it. What
he he's going to target a couple of guys. And I just get so excited for year two and year three.
Mm-hmm.
This is a throwaway expansion season from the get-go, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, some people confuse expectations with hopes in that you can look at the team on paper and say, oh, that maybe that's a 500 team. But then you think about how fun last year was, and we won 40 games, and I want them to win, and we're gonna help pull them through. And I think sometimes your hopes can cloud realistic expectations, and that might be part of the problem. Is some people, no one in particular that I know of, just I think in general the fan base after last season was kind of riding high, and now you're thinking, oh, we're going to be a winning franchise from here on out, when in reality this team may not be as talented as the other teams in the league. You got an adjustment period with new opponents, new referees, new buildings, and then you also have the issue of getting the affiliation guys and having people come from so many different directions and trying to put it all together, and it may just take a year to get adjusted and get everything on the same page.
Sounds good. So are we still at the first paragraph?
Yes,
then?
Yes, we are. Yeah, one other thing I wanted to mention about Friday, to me, the funniest thing of the entire night was second intermission, I'm leaving the press box to go deliver paperwork to Crom. And as I walk out of the press box, I see Jake Obermeyer, who was still inactive Friday. He's walking down the hallway behind the press box, and it's at the time that Gangnam Style is being played.
When they're picking up the chuck-a-pucks from the...
Yeah. So he's walking down the hallway with his fingers in his ears. And I looked at him and I said, so are you sick of this song yet? He said, yes, this song sucks. That's why I'm walking down the hallway with my fingers in the ears, even though I look stupid. So there you go. Everybody who doesn't like Gangnam Style, Jake Obermeyer probably just gained a few points in your eyes because, he's not a fan of the song either.
Where was the flashing bucket on Friday night? Did it show up on Saturday for the chuck-a-puck?
I noticed that it was gone on Friday. I didn't notice whether or not it had come back on Saturday. I don't know. Maybe somebody stole it and was using... our live studio audience, my wife Amanda, chiming in saying, no, it was not there on Saturday either. So maybe somebody decided to use it as a helmet or something to protect us from the end of the world last Friday.
My guess is Brian Vall, single man, probably ran out of dishes and had to use it for his dinner, which was a full box of cornflakes or something like that. And so he took it home and forgot to bring it back. And it just stacked up with the whole pile of dishes in this kitchen.
Maybe. So, yeah, apparently it didn't come back on Saturday. So a few things about Saturday I also wanted to mention. Saturday, Paul Dayton was supposed to start in net.
As I predicted.
As you predicted last week. He tweaked a knee or a groin or something on Friday. There was a save in the third period where he did the splits and kind of got up gingerly. He finished the game on Friday, but apparently he didn't feel well enough to go on Saturday. So even though Dayton was supposed to start, he ended up scratching himself, basically, and Karpowicz played instead. And I thought Karp played well. Other than the two goals in 12 seconds that we gave up in the third period, he was really solid and made some really nice saves. It's worth noting, and this is just one of those odd coincidences, but on Saturday, Louis, the mascot of the St. Louis Blues, was there. Karpowicz is, of course, a Blues prospect. That was the second time this season that Louis has been in an Iceman game. Both times he's been there, Karp has played and won.
So
maybe we need to get Louis over here every night. He's not doing anything.
Put him on the roster.
Yeah, exactly. He can be our 10th forward.
Hey, the roster doesn't say anything about how many mascots we can have.
That's true, yeah. I guess you could bring in as many as you want. Also about Saturday, I thought it was just it's fun to see a rivalry building with Kalamazoo. We obviously already have the rivalry with Fort Wayne. We've started to see some sparks fly with Toledo and Cincinnati, too, and now we're starting to see it with Kalamazoo. In the second period, Matt Jens laid out Kyle Page with an open ice hip check, and at the time, nothing happened. There was no penalty to Jens. Nobody fought him. There was a lot of chirping, and I thought it was odd. Even though the ref did not call any penalties, he made Jens go to the bench. It's like, I found that very odd, because either you call a penalty or you don't. You can't just force a guy to go to the bench without calling a penalty. But in any case, there was no fight at the time, but the game got really chippy after that, and it ended up that at the end of the game, after the final buzzer, Jens fought Nick Sirota. Now, it was a fight, but it didn't go down as a fight in the stats because the ref only assessed 2 for roughing and 2 for unsportsmanlike conduct to each, which I guess saves them from some paperwork. Saves the ref from some paperwork and the guys from perhaps a possible suspension, because fighting after the final buzzer is frowned upon. But initially, there were no penalties reported. They broke it once it all broke up and the players went to their locker rooms. The refs didn't come over and give any penalties to Steve Halber, the official scorer down at ice level. So we were wondering whether or not they were even going to assess anything. So when I was talking to Crom after the game, I said, FYI, as of right now, they haven't assessed any penalties for the scrum at the end. And he looked at me and said, well, if they do call any, I'm sure they'll only be on us. But they did end up adding them afterward. After they probably wanted to consult the rule books and talk amongst themselves and figure out how exactly they wanted to call it. But we've talked about context-driven officiating before, and that's a case of that.
Yep.
You see what happens during the game. You know it's coming, that something has to happen to right the wrong, perceived or realistic. And hopefully once they fight, get it out of their system, that's dead. It's the end of the story. So I think, yeah, the ref could have thrown the book at him for fighting after the final buzzer, but he chose to go 2-2 and just leave it at that. And hopefully that'll be the end of that issue. But it won't be the end of it. There will still be bad blood in future games, but at least for the moment, things have probably settled down because of the fight. So I applaud the officials for that. It was interesting, too, after the hip check that Jens hurt Paige on, the Kalamazoo trainer was tending to Paige in their locker room, and like 2 minutes later, another Kalamazoo player gets hurt. There was a weird pile up in front of the net, and one of their guys got hurt. So without the Kalamazoo trainer, Brian Patafi ran out onto the ice to tend to the Wings player. And I asked Patafi, you know, what do you do in that situation? You go out there and you're tending to the other team's player. And he said the player that was hurt was a guy that he had known. They've been on a team together or something in the past. And went down and said, what's wrong with you? And the guy said, I hit my head. And he looked up and realized it was Patafi wearing an Iceman shirt. And he said, did I get traded?
All right. So obviously he's not going to pass that concussion test.
No, I don't think so. Although, I don't know. He was probably just joking. But yeah, if he was serious, that really would be. Yeah, it's time to go to the dark room for a few minutes. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting little story from Saturday night. But I do believe That's all of our first paragraph, unless you have anything else specifically.
I just wanted you to bring up, because you have it in the notes, about Sandy Hook Elementary and the stickers.
I did mention that earlier.
Did you really?
I'm sorry. Were you here for the show?
I didn't.
Yeah, okay. They did. Yeah, they mentioned we mentioned the moment.
Well,
of silence.
I remember you saying that that the players maybe they came out flat because of the moment of silence.
Yeah.
But I didn't hear you mention the stickers on the helmets and stuff. Did you really do that?
Yeah. Yeah, all we can go. We can pull our live studio audience and see if I did indeed see that.
I may have doctored up this eggnog here, post Christmas eggnog celebration. Disregard that then.
Yeah, I guess we'll just move along.
I just know Brian Patapi last week at the show. He mentioned it off air, and he was really excited that he was going to be able to do that.
It
was
cool. Yeah,
but he wanted to keep it under wraps until Friday night.
Yeah, well, it didn't quite get there. The team posted it on the official Facebook on Friday afternoon.
Right, but he wanted it out Wednesday.
Right, yeah. Yeah, they apparently it was on all the players' helmets, and again, yeah, the moment of silence was a really cool touch. I thought it was, you don't really realize how long 26 seconds is until you got 5,000 people standing completely silent for that long. And then it's like, wow. Kind of sobering. But on a happier note, I did want to discuss a few individual highlights from over the weekend. Nathan Moon on Friday, his unassisted goal was a thing of beauty when he went into a pile of three guys and stole the puck and then made a really nice shot to pick up a goal. That was gorgeous. He had a goal and an assist on Friday, and then he had another assist on Saturday, so it was a good weekend for him. Dylan Clark continues to play incredibly well. His goal on Friday was a really nice lead pass from Jim McKenzie, and then basically when he got the puck, Clark was neck and neck with one of the Trenton players, and he just won the foot race to gain separation. So that was impressive speed. And then on Saturday, his goal on Saturday was a sick top-shelf backhand. It was just an incredible shot. So Clark continues to impress. Matt Shepke was a healthy scratch on Friday, but on Saturday he was on a line with Clark and Moon, and he looked really good too. He had a goal and an assist on Saturday. That was his first multi-point game of the season, so good for him. Jesse Perrin continues to play really well. He had six or seven big hits on Saturday. He was really on his game on Saturday. And I also wanted to mention this weekend was the first time we've gotten to see Kevin Baker play.
Yep.
And he didn't have any points over the weekend, but I liked what I saw out of him. He plays to me, he's a little older than Beaulieu, but he plays to me very similar to the way Beaulieu plays. He's digging in the corners and, 100 miles an hour around the ice and plays with a lot of energy. So I liked what I saw out of him, even though he didn't show up on the score sheet.
I also like Jim McKenzie's play, too.
Yeah.
I really do like it. And part of it, again, you talk about hope and expectation and criticism, but my hope may be driving a little bit more of what I'm seeing on the ice. But on Friday night, they threw out a quick little Robinson, Baker, McKenzie line out there.
Yeah.
Let the old dogs loose. Got to let us old dogs loose every once in a while. But I really like his play, and I hope we can figure out a way to get him in the lineup on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I just, again, we talked about last week. I just don't know how you do it. I mean, he played on Friday, but at the expense of Daniel Tatro.
Yep.
And I think we really miss Tatro on D.
Yep.
So then on Saturday, you put Tatro back in, and McKenzie has to come out, unless you decide to sit Matt Jens or Todd Robinson, which that's not going to happen. So I don't know.
It's difficult.
Yeah, it's just that's what we have in this situation with the limit on the number of veterans, and it's unfortunate, but that's just how it is. But final thing also about the weekend, the Dale Kennedy-Vogelhuber line, we've talked about them before. They were on their game on Saturday. They looked excellent. They had two goals and three assists and were plus four combined. So another good game from them. The goal that ended up being the game winner, at the time it was just an insurance goal, but it turned out to be the game winner, was Vogelhuber made an incredible move and drew two men over and then found Jason Dale alone in the slot. And it was a great move, and that line is just fun to watch. They don't put up a ton of points, but they're fun to watch play. They do all the little things right.
Well, and the one thing I've noticed, too, is the Icemen get a goal, and Crom marches that checking line out there. That is, you can almost set your watch by it. If the Icemen score, the checking line's coming out.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to give up a quick goal back the other way. And it seems like that's been a problem for this team a lot this season, is we'll score a goal or two and then give the momentum right back. And it seems like that line is a good way to try to prevent that.
Our next segment, our best segment, because I don't talk at all, and Shocker talks very little. But
I don't talk through this segment. I just introduce it. That's
yes.
true. Yeah.
Shockers, hockey, rock song of the week.
This week's song of the week. This is a tune I used to play at Swander for what I like to call an overdue power play. One of those situations where you get four or five penalties in a row on the Iceman, and then we finally get a power play with a penalty on the other team. I would play this song. Also, this is dedicated to the Mayans who botched Friday's end of the world that didn't happen. Sadly, I saw a poll that said 12% of Americans actually believe the world was going to end on Friday, which, well, that 12% of people need to be locked up, I think. But we know now that the Mayans apparently just got bored and decided to stop making their calendar, so the world did not end on Friday, but as a result, I do want to play this little tribute to it. This is REM, It's the End of the World as We Know It.
That's great, it starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an airplane, Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane, listen to yourself, turn world, serve its own needs, dummy, serve your own needs, beat it up, a knock, speak, grunt, no strength, the ladder starts to clatter with fear, bite down, high wire and a fire, represented seven games in the government for hire. Fury's breathing down your neck. Team IT reporters babble Trump, Kevin Kraft, look at that, no plane, fine, then, uh-oh, overflow, population common food, but it'll do, save yourself, serve yourself, world, serve its own needs, listen to your heartbeat, dummy with the rapture and the reverend and the right, right, you patriotic, slam, fight, bright, light, feeling, pretty sight. It's the end of the world as we know it, it's the end of the world. Slice and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Locking in, uniform and book burning, blood letting, every motive escalate, automotive centering. Light a candle, light a motive, step down, watch your heel crush, crush. Uh-oh, this means no fear, cavalier, renegade, steer clear. A tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world. Sign, Leonid, Brezhnev, Lenny, Bruce, and Lester Banks, birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom, you symbiotic, patriotic, slam, button, nap, right?
It's the end of the world as we know it.
And back here live with Iceman Insights, starring Michael Shockley, senior writer and webmaster for IcemanManiacs.com. You're listening to Iceman Insights, as you do every week, on 96.9 WYIR Music Bomb. So it is time for us to step into our large room that has our giant supercomputer that keeps our tally of the Iceman Man games lost to injury.
Yeah, the number is growing, but it's starting to slow down a little bit. through 31 games in the season, we now have 171 Man games lost. But the good news is we're down to only 5 guys on IR.
Woohoo!
Yeah. That's the smallest number in a while.
That's so, like, half.
Yeah, we are at we're still at 41 different players have played. We're at now at 14 total call-ups to the AHL involving 12 different players. So yeah, it's the numbers are staggering, but it is hopefully starting to slow down a little bit, at least on the injury front. Who knows what's going to happen with call-ups? We may continue to have lots of those, but we're making a little bit of progress. So Thursday, Robin Dore was recalled by Charlotte. You know, we're not affiliated with them, but the Charlotte Checkers in the AHL just needed a place to put him. They had 2 goalies already on their roster, and Medora is a prospect of theirs, but they didn't have anywhere to put him, so they assigned him to us. So we got him for most of the season, but it came time last week that the Florida Everblades, the ECHL, they are one of Charlotte's affiliates. And Florida needed a goalie because they have 2 AHL affiliates. And one of their AHL affiliates, Syracuse, needed a goalie from Florida because one of their goalies was going back home to Finland to tend to some family issues or something. So while he was gone, they called a guy up from Florida. That created a vacancy in Florida. And then Charlotte decided to take care of their affiliate, basically, and recall Medora from here and then reassign him to Florida. Now, every indication is that he will only be there short term because the Syracuse Crunch expect to get their guy back from Finland. When they do, they'll send their guy back to Florida. Then Florida won't have room for Medora. So it's very possible that we'll get Medora back once Finland, the guy is back from Finland.
But that's not a guarantee.
But it's not a guarantee. It's quite possible that because we have 2 goalies now with Karpowicz and Dayton, the Charlotte may just decide to put him somewhere else.
I would assume that the Charlotte GM is making phone calls all around the league to anyone who,
right,
hey, I got a rookie, I need him to play at
right,
least backup minutes, not in a 3-man rotation. Do you have a need?
Exactly.
So there's, I would say it's 50-50 he comes back here.
Yeah.
And before he's found a new home.
Yeah. So it's possible that we'll see him again, but yeah, I would certainly not expect it to be a given by any means. So we may have seen the last of Medora here. Who knows? We'll see. He did play on Saturday for Florida against Orlando, gave up 2 goals in a 2-1 overtime loss. So
did he give up any to Dan Gender or
I don't believe
or
so,
Dale
no.
Mahovsky?
I don't think either of them scored. Mahovsky still is scoreless. I was looking at his stats, and he's struggling. He's like scoreless and -6 or something with Orlando so far. Gender's doing a little bit better. He's got a few points here and there, but still not probably living up to the expectations that are given him. But yeah, so we may have seen the last of Medora. Who knows? Only time will tell. I would imagine within the next probably 2 weeks we'll find out where Medora is going to end up. But it probably won't be Florida, and my guess is it might not be here either. So
yep.
It's unfortunate. I think he was seemed like a good guy, and he showed some flashes of being really talented, but when you have 3 goalies and 2 of them belong to your affiliates and one of them doesn't, the one that doesn't is the odd man out.
Yep.
We've said it before. So it's unfortunate, but that's just the way it is. So also on the goalie note, there was some talk on Facebook that Alan York may have gotten hurt in Springfield, and it turns out it wasn't that bad, so they didn't need to call someone up. But people started freaking out. Well, if Alan York's hurt, that means they're going to call up Dayton, and then we've only got 1 goalie. Well, it doesn't necessarily, you know, if something happens to York, if his groin falls off again,
wow,
it doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to lose Dayton, because Springfield has 2 goalies that are their property who are currently playing in AA. We've got Dayton here, who they assigned here, but they also have a goalie named Mike Clement, who they assigned to the Missouri Mavericks in the CHL at the start of the season. So they could call up Clement if they needed a goalie in a pinch. So it doesn't necessarily mean we would lose Dayton if York were to get hurt. They actually already did call up Clement once earlier this season when Dayton was the backup up in Springfield. He got tweaked a groin or something in practice and missed one game, and they called Clement up to fill his spot. So I don't know which way they would go, but you would like to think that if York got hurt and they needed somebody for a few games, that they would lean toward, you know, not leaving their affiliate hung out to dry. So they would prefer to keep Dayton here, keep getting him work, and then call up Clement from Missouri. But yeah, it's not a given that if York were to get hurt that we would be down to one goalie. So something to keep in mind.
Yeah, and an interesting thought for next year, as we, you know, we have no idea how many affiliates we'll have next year, two, one, or none. But as a coaching staff, as a ownership decision, do you find like Karpowicz in his second year or a Rob Madore, someone who isn't a veteran but is solid and has no affiliations, do you have a goaltender like that on your club so you always have a number one guy that you can go to unless the AHL sends you down someone and then you split it, but you always have your guy that no one can take from you? Just a thought for the future.
Yeah, I think that's probably certainly a consideration, but it ultimately will come down to the number of affiliations. If you have two affiliations and they both tell you they're going to be sending you a goalie, then you kind of can't do that.
Yeah. So well, but you can always stick them on reserve, though.
True. But, you know, if next season were to go the way this season's gone, we need those reserve spots for as many other legitimate needs as we can. Carrying three goalies would be a luxury. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I think it's tough to really draw any conclusions about affiliations based on this season because of the lockout. There's been a ton of movement and a lot of call-ups and stuff, but the Icemen have had a lot of injuries. Peoria's had a lot of injuries. It's hard to really figure out what this season means for whether or not the team will continue to be affiliated with one or two teams in the future. I would guess we're going to stay affiliated with somebody. The question is, Do we keep both St. Louis and Columbus, or do we trim back to just one of them, or do we lose both of them and go for somebody else? Who knows? A lot of the affiliation deals are one-year deals, so there could be other teams that are looking for an affiliate too.
Well, and it also changes too from the NHL perspective, which is, hey, you know, if and I'd say St. Louis drafts a bunch of kids that are in U.S. college hockey right now. They don't need to send them to the ECHL because they've got another year of schooling and everything else. So, and then you have other teams that either have guys graduating out of U.S. college or graduating out of Canada Juniors, and then they've got to find a place for them. So that's when, you know, they start counting up the pieces in the roster spots and say, wow, we've got seven guys that we need to deal with. We better get a couple of ECHL affiliates. Right. So that's all in this. You know, so before even the Iceman, even, you know, the Iceman may say, yeah, we want to do two again, but that comes from the NHL level saying how many teams need put players into the ECHL.
Right. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see. My gut feeling is that we'll probably stick with both of them if they'll have us. If both Columbus and St. Louis want to keep us as their affiliates, I got a feeling we will continue to be. Just because I just think this season is such an oddball season that they're not going to make any rash decisions about the arrangement until we have a normal, quote-unquote, season to go through and see how it plays out. So who knows? Time will tell. But continuing with the injuries and transactions, speaking of the affiliates, on Friday, Cody Beach was recalled by Peoria. And then Anthony Nigro and Brett Ponitz were recalled on Saturday. Now, the Rivermen did not actually have a game. They didn't have any injuries where they needed someone to fill in. It was just a case of the AHL and the ECHL both have a Christmas time roster freeze where you can't make moves like that. And they basically wanted to call their guys up so that they have all hands on deck in case someone were to get injured in practice or someone needs personal leave or whatever. They want to have everyone there so that they're covered, basically. And over the Christmas break, they can assess how things are and then determine who to send back down. So in all likelihood, once the roster freeze is over before we play any more games, we'll get three or four guys sent back down. It may not be the same three, but we will get some people sent back down. So it's just one of those quirks of working around the roster freeze and making sure that Peoria is covering themselves so that they don't get hung out to dry and need a couple guys and not be able to call them up. So, nothing really to be alarmed at there. Just we didn't have Beach either game this weekend. We didn't have Nigro and Ponitz on Saturday, but someone will be back before we play another game. So we'll see who it is. Also on Friday, Aaron Jens came off the IR. Yeah, and Karpowicz and McKenzie were both taken off of reserve. Daniel Tatro was put on to reserve, but he was healthy. It was just a case of veteran shuffling in order to get McKenzie some action. Interestingly, with Tatro missing a game, we're now down to only three guys who have played every game this season. Josh Beaulieu, Matt Jens, and Jason Dale. That's the only three. Tatro had played every game until he was deactivated for Friday. And I think they missed him on Friday, so I was glad to see him back in the lineup on Saturday. Speaking of Saturday, before the game on Saturday, Tatro was activated from reserve. McKenzie was put back on to reserve. And in addition to Nigro and Ponich being called up, we did activate Jake Overmeyer from the IR. So he came back on Saturday, which, like I said, dwindled our IR count down to five. So making progress.
Yep.
But our active roster as of the time of this recording is currently only at 18 players. We got 9 forwards, 7 D, and 2 goalies. So we can actually take two guys back from Peoria after the roster freeze is over without needing to move anyone. We have two spots available. And we also have one empty spot on reserve. So if Peoria does send us three guys back down, we can take all three of them without really getting rid of anybody. Someone will have to be shifted over to reserve, but that would be the only necessary change. We wouldn't have to cut somebody outright. So that's where things stand as of when we record this. The roster freeze is currently in place. So I think the official rules are that you can shift guys from active to reserve and IR. You just can't cut. You can't trade. You can't
release.
The AHL can't have call-ups. So you can shuffle within who you already have, but who you have at your disposal cannot change until after the freeze is over. And I think it goes until Thursday at noon or something. So, and I think the AHL's roster freeze also goes until Thursday. So probably on Thursday there will be a rash of transactions,
yeah.
Readjusting things and seeing how everything's going to play out after the freeze is over. So, again, we've mentioned it before. Anytime you want to see what the active, the updated Iceman roster looks like, go to IcemanManiacs.com, click over to the Maniac message board. You can just click on that there red graphic that has the handicap symbols. It'll take you to the active roster at the end of that page, and you'll see who we got and who's been called up and who's hurt and all that jazz. So that's the end of our injury and transaction report for this
week.
How
about that? We talked about Friday and Saturday that Iceman, it didn't look too good. I talked about Friday night. I thought the worst part was they claw back, they tie the game 3-3, and then give up a quick goal right after that, lose the game. Saturday, they're comfortably ahead into the third period. Then they give up a couple of quick goals, and boy, this team, for whatever reason, really struggles in the third period.
Yeah, I looked up the numbers, and scoring by period, the team is -6 in the first period, which isn't good, but just wait a minute. It's not good. We're -2 in the second period. The goal differential in the first period is we've scored 27, given up 33. Second period, we've scored 27, given up 29. But in the third period, that's where it's really ugly. Our goal differential is -19. We've scored 29 and given up 48. Now, that's partially affected by all the empty netters we've given up. But even if you take empty net goals scored and allowed out of the picture, we're still -15 in the third period. And I don't really know what that is, what is leading to this team being so bad in the third period. But it's really baffling, because if you can do it for the first two periods and play relatively even, what happens in the third where things just fall apart so often? And I don't know. I mean, the team has been pretty good if you score early and get ahead. They're 9-3-2 when they score first. They're 8-3-1 when they lead after one period. They're 10-1-2 when leading after two. So those are pretty solid numbers. Now, those are more or less average. Most teams have good numbers like that when, you know, if you can't win most of your games when you're leading after two, then you've got real problems. But the problems in the third period really show up when you look at when we're behind. It just gets worse. We're only 2-14-1 when the opponent scores first. We're 1-12 when trailing after the first period, and 0-12 when trailing after two. So this team just has not been able to put it together. If you're behind entering the third period, it's like game over.
Yeah, and my first thought is conditioning. Why do they are falling apart in the third period? But I can't believe I've watched Kromp's practices, and I I can't be surprised, especially with the number of AHL players we have coming down too, that conditioning is the answer. But
yeah.
But I still got to throw it out there because that's the first thing I think of.
Yeah, me too.
Another thing I think of is, you know, I am on the side of we don't have enough talent to be above 500 in this league. And I think when we score, whether we score in the first or don't score in the first, this team is only going to score 3 goals a game on average. And so whether we're behind early and can't make it up or whether we get to 3 quickly, but then eventually
we hit a wall.
Yes. And when the offensive pressure is lacking, the greatest thing as a defenseman is to have a great offense. Playing the game is super easy. It doesn't matter how fast the other team is if you got a great offense in front of you. And boy, the game, if you don't have a good offense, you spend a lot of time in your defensive zone. And that's where you just get broken down. You get broken down with isolation plays and good passes and backdoor passes, and you end up giving up a lot of goals. So just another thought there.
Yeah, and I think also discipline is part of it too. It seems like a lot of times if we do get a lead and we're trying to protect it, when other teams lock down, we just take penalties.
Yeah.
And it's hard to protect a lead, and it's hard to come back from if you're behind, if you got guys in the penalty box all the time.
And you're shorthanded.
Yeah.
So, yep, interesting thing to watch and see how it develops and try to figure out. I'm sure Crom's trying to figure it out, too.
Yeah. I mean, you got to think, sooner or later, we're going to win a game when we're trailing after two, but 0-12 is not the way you want to start in that stat.
Yeah. And it just, Fick talked about it on the radio 2 weekends ago, and you're sitting in your car, you're listening to the games, and that third period rolls up, and you start getting nervous as a fan. I do, at least.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the score is. You know, if we're down 4-2, I'm like, oh, this one's over, because you just don't have any hope that they can come back
right.
and score. And when they're up 3-1, you're nervous. You're like, oh, man, are we going to throw this one away?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I guess the good thing you can, by looking at those stats, the one positive you can take is we've played 31 games and we've only been trailing after 2-12 times.
So, at least that's a
small consolation. So it does. We don't have to deal with that stress quite as often. But yeah, it's something that's going to have to change if this team wants to win more games. They've got to figure out a way to come from behind every now and then, and they've got to do better about protecting leads, because while 10-1-2 when leading after two is solid, there's other teams that never lose. Alaska is 16-0 when we're leading after two.
Yeah, sheesh.
Now, that's a really good team
with
a lot of high-level talent, but still. So 10-1-2 is good, but you'd still like to be even better, and you got to find a way to win some games when you're not leading. Moving on. Wanted to talk a little bit about 3 stars. After Friday's game, Chad Burley, who has been more often than not the official scorer this season. And for those who don't know, you think, well, when a goal happens, the referee calls goals and assists. Not at this level. At this level, the referee usually will give you the goal scorer, but that's it. It's up to the official scorer who's sitting up in the press box to determine who the assist went to, and if necessary, you know, you'll consult video and make sure you get the numbers right. So the official scorer, in addition to doling out goals and assists and making sure that's all correct, also usually is the prime person who determines the 3 stars of the game. Well, after Friday's game, Chad and I had a nice little discussion about the 3 stars that night. And even though the Icemen lost, one of the Icemen were worthy of having at least one player in the 3 stars. In that game, Nathan Moon had a goal and an assist. He was +2, and he had 3 shots. Dylan Clark had 1 goal, no assists. He was only even. He wasn't a plus, but he was even. He had 7 shots. And Chad said his first inclination was to go with Moon because he had the multi-point night and he was +2. But a few other people in the press box that he was talking to ended up kind of talking him into going with Clark instead. And he asked me what I would have done. And I told him, I don't think you could go wrong with either one. Either one of them would have been a fine choice. But to me, the stats should only be a starting point when determining the 3 stars, because it's the 3 stars of the game. It's not the 3 top scorers of the game. Anybody can look at a box score and figure out which guys had the most points. To me, the 3 stars is about, if you're watching the game, who had the biggest impact on the game. And to me that night, even though Moon had probably better numbers, fewer shots, but he had better numbers overall because of the +2 and the extra point, I thought Clark just played a better overall game. So I was fine with leaning toward Clark, which is what they ended up doing. They ended up going toward Clark. But I just wanted to get your take as someone who has been the official scorer in the past for the Iceman on what went into your thinking as far as, you know, if you've got a guy that's got 4 points and nobody else has more than two, it's obvious. But when you've got situations like that where everyone only has a point or two and you've got one spot to fill, what went into the decision-making process for you?
Actually, I'll caution you, even if a guy has 4 points and other guys only have two, that doesn't necessarily mean that I wouldn't go with them either. The fun thing about the three stars is it's a hockey tradition. It's not in the rule book, other than the ECHL rule book says the three stars will be determined by the official score.
Right.
But there is no criteria. There's no nothing. This is just something that started in Canada years ago, just like the hat trick. You know, the hat trick was, I think it started in Montreal, but don't quote me on that. It might have been Ottawa.
I'm not 100% sure. I'd have to look it up.
But there was a suit store, and one of the players came in, and he wanted a hat. And the owner's like, you score 3 goals tonight, I'll give you a hat. And that player went out. I mean, this goes back to like 1907 or 1910.
Yeah, a long time ago. I've heard the story. I just don't remember where it was.
I think it was Montreal. But player went out, scored 3 goals, went back the next day and gave a hat. And so it became a sponsorship for the local players. If you score 3 goals in a game, you get a hat. So they called it a hat trick. Same with the three stars. I have no idea where the three stars began. But it's tradition. It's not rule. I was trained to do the three stars by watching Hockey Night in Canada as a teenager. I mean, just it was always given, and it was, you know, it was discussed during the broadcast and everything else, and some of that influence and everything else just kind of came into it. I did official scoring for 2 years for the Iceman, and I also gave out three stars when WYIR did the broadcast, the one and only Iceman championship
year. You
gave
out your own personal three stars.
Bridget McDonald asked me if I would
so
do
you
it.
Did them.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And so I said, yeah, I might as well since I'm sitting in the building here freezing every night. But I do take in, you know, you take in the score of the game, you do take in the statistics, but yeah, as you're watching the game, and it's my favorite, hockey is my favorite sport. I think it's the greatest sport. One, you have to do it. Everything that you do is on an eighth of an inch thick piece of steel. So you're not running, you don't have cleats or anything like that. And the other thing is your best players don't play much more than a third of the game. Mm-hmm. So it is a true team sport. And how I would always do the first stars is every shift, who is impressing me? Am I noticing a line over and over and over, a forward line or a D pairing? As the game goes on, every time, you know, that line comes on the ice, are they getting a scoring chance? Every time that line, that D line comes on the ice, are they throwing huge body checks and you know, it's stopping the opponent forwards for coming in? And then for the goalies, you know, I expect the goalies to make 18 out of 20 saves. You know, that 90% is kind of that plateau, that grading point. And if I see amazing saves, even if he's under the 90%, say he's given up, you know, even 4 goals in the night, 26 out of 30 shots. But in the last 5 minutes, he weathers a storm and makes some ridiculous, you know, the stack pad save or the big windmill glove save. You know, that, you know, a big thing like that will push it over. But it really just is personal preference. And so you just kind of get the feel. I go more by shots than I do points. You know, if I see, man, that line's all over the place, and then I look down and Dylan Clark's got 9 shots on the night, or a Todd Robinson's got 8 shots on the night and 3 assists, I may pass up a guy with 2 goals because a Todd Robinson has dominated the game. So, and then there's just little things. You know, I think a shutout and hat tricks are something amazing at the professional level. They don't happen very often. So shutout goalie is always going to get a number one star, in my opinion. 3 goals in a night, a hat trick is always going to get a first star unless said event shutout happens before it.
Yeah.
But it really is just feel of the game.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are too quick to just, especially for road games, people will look at the box score and go, well, this guy had a goal and 2 assists, and the guy that they gave the third star only had 1 assist. How can they possibly do that? You know, there are times when if you really just sit and watch a game, you could have a guy that has no points, but if he's killing penalties, if he's hitting, if he just has an effect on the way the game is played.
He's hit 2 posts.
Yeah.
That doesn't even count in the stat
right.
book.
You can have a guy that may, just by glancing at the box score, have had a really quiet night, but it's more to me about the eyeball test. I agree with you. You know, the box score can be a starting point, but that should not be the be-all, end-all, because there's a, you know, hockey's not played on paper. It's not played on a box score. It's played on the ice. And you have to look at the totality of the entire game, the situations and how things play out and how guys perform under pressure, too. You know, if you get – you may have a guy, too, that has two goals, but if your team's down 6-1 entering the third period and both the goals are in the third period, you know, that kind of devalues those goals a little bit. So, yeah, I agree. I'm with you on generally the way you went with it. And I think talking to Chad on Friday, I think that's the thing, too, is you have to remember it's just personal preference.
Yep.
And unless there's just an absolute clear cut and dry guy that just stood out above everybody else, it's probably going to end up coming down to the judgment of the person who's making the decision.
It is funny when you get barked at. You know, someone says, I can't believe you didn't do that. Terry Ficcarelli barked at me the first year of the CHL.
No.
Yes, we lost a 2-1 game, and I can't remember to who it was, but is it Jachytis?
From Dayton?
Yes.
Yeah.
Dayton beat us 2-1. Jachytis made 27, 28 stops out of 29, and I didn't give him one of the stars. And only three goals scored in the game. But I felt like the Dayton team had played so well in all three zones that all the shots were – I didn't see anything spectacular. And Jachytis obviously is a fantastic goaltender.
Yeah.
And but all the shots were like from 40, 45 feet out. And in my opinion, they were routine saves. And he had a great night because of the team playing in front of him. So I went with the two Dayton goal scorers and maybe the Iceman goal scorer.
Ah.
Because I gave it to the Iceman goal scorer because the team Dayton just played so well from the goal line out. So scoring a goal against them was he was definitely one of the top three players in the game, and then I gave it to whoever else from Dayton. Ed Ficcarelli's like, I can't believe you didn't give him a three star. And at first I was like, oh, I screwed up, because I didn't even think about it. And then, you know, 5-10 minutes later, when you're thinking about it, you're like, you know, he didn't do anything spectacular. He didn't do anything top three. He did his job. And so, I have nothing against goaltenders, you know. I mean, I'm getting along in my career, and, you know, who knows? Someday I might be sleeping with old goaltenders. But so it is a judgment thing, and it's just funny how sometimes people do get offended with the choices.
Yeah, well, and with goalies, too, I think people just look at the number of saves you make. But ultimately, goalies are expected to make the routine saves. And like you said, if all they see is routine shots, if they don't make any wowing saves or any true, you know, there's every save technically saves a goal. But there are saves that you should make, and there are saves you have no business making. And
yes,
if you make those saves that you have no business making, that's what bumps you up a step in that discussion. But it's funny, too, on some nights, and when you were the official scorer, I would be on the headset doing the music, and sometimes we would talk about the three stars, too. And to me, it seems like there were some nights where, you know, if you've got a bunch of goals and both goalies play well despite the bunch of goals, you may have 6-7 guys that you're considering for those three spots. And then there's other games where it's like, who are we going to give this to? Like, nobody stands out. You may have a 2-1 game where both goalies have looked a little shaky and nobody has more than one point, and you're like, how do we fill these three spots? But then other nights, it's there's so many guys, and you have to whittle it down somehow. And it's those cases when usually you'll end up having somebody be upset with the decisions. But, yeah, it's just judgment.
Another quick comment and then another little quick story. It's also
as
tough.
As we enter hour two of...
Oh, I got a new slogan for us, too.
Oh.
Iceman Insights, the longest hour-long radio show in America.
There we go.
But it's also tough. 2-2 game, 1-1 game, 3-3 tie. And, you know, there's 2 minutes left. Both radio broadcasters and Iceman staff want to know who the three stars are because they want them to come out and salute the crowd and everything else. And they're, you know, so they're yelling on the headsets, hey, we need to know what the three stars are. But you've got a potential game-winning goal on the line.
Right.
So how can you say who the number one star is until you know who's won the game? So that gets difficult as well.
Yeah, and you can't necessarily leave a spot open for the game winner in that
nope.
case because you never know. It could be where it's a guy that's played a terrible game and has taken two or three really bad penalties, and then he has a puck bounce off of his knee and into the net, and
yep.
it counts as the game winner.
And he pulls off a 360 and a breakaway and goes top shelf, and then you don't put him on there, and then everyone complains. How can you not reward him for
exactly.
that?
Exactly. So, every game is a different animal.
Also, just official scoring nightmare last year against – who did Eric Gyosa play for with last year? Was that Quad City?
Yeah.
And he's one of my favorites in the league. Fantastic player.
He's good.
Playing up in Fort Wayne right now, though he's fighting through some injuries, I believe. But he had a fight – and then I think he had a goal later on. And then in the third period, a bunch of stuff happened, a bunch of scoring and whatever else. And I think Quad City beat us that night. And I did the three stars and everything else, and I kept him off the list. I thought, you know, he was right in the discussion, but I had three other guys. Well, on review after the game, I found that I had missed an assist. I had given it to the wrong person.
So he got a Gordie.
He got a Gordie Howe hat trick, and I didn't reward him for that in the three stars.
You schmuck.
So Eric Gyosa is actually on Facebook.
Really?
I tracked him down the next day, and I said, hey, I'm the official scorer. I sent him a private message saying, I'm the official scorer. I didn't find that assist until after the game in video review. You would have had a Gordie Howe hat trick. I would have easily put you in the three stars. I just want to apologize. And he sent me a message back that said, hey, I understand. It's no big deal. Don't worry about it. Thanks for contacting me. But it's just, you know, sometimes it just happens so fast. You're trying to feel the game. You're trying to look at statistics and everything else. And then one assist changes. And all of a sudden, a guy goes from fourth or fifth on your list to the top two. And then, again, something special. Another hockey tradition, the Gordie Howe hat trick.
Yeah.
Which I think Gordie Howe had, I think he had two Gordie Howe hat tricks.
I had heard somewhere, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I had heard that he never actually got one.
And that may be true. I know it's something really small. And the actual person who has ever had the most quote-unquote Gordie Howe hat tricks, again, because it's tradition, not a rule book thing or anything, I believe is Rick Tocchet.
That sounds right.
Yep.
I wouldn't doubt that one bit because he played that same kind of style.
And he had 49 of them or something. He has a ridiculous amount, and the next person has 17.
Well, and he played a lot of time with Mario Lemieux, too.
Yes.
So that makes the goal and assist part a little bit easier when you're playing with a guy like Super Mario.
Yep. So just a bunch of other nonsense as we do here on Iceman Insights. What's next?
We're finally getting to the end of our first page.
Oh my God.
This is actually, we're gonna take another quick little break. This is a bonus Shockers Hockey Rock Song of the Week. Oh, wait. We got to do the official intro.
We do.
Derek gets really excited about
this. I do. Shockers Hockey Rock Song of the Week.
Part deux.
Ooh.
Yeah.
En français.
En français. Oui, oui.
Play. Ha, ha.
This is a really quick one. This song's actually less than a minute long, but this is another Christmas song. It's a spoof from Bob Rivers, who did the 12 Pains of Christmas, which I played last week. This is set to the tune of We Wish You a Merry Christmas, but this is dedicated to everyone who has family staying with them over the holidays. This is a little tune called We Wish You Weren't Living With Us.
We wish you weren't living with us. We wish you weren't living with us. We wish you weren't living with us. We're not happy you're near. You drive everybody crazy. You're hopelessly fat and lazy. You're constantly in the way here. So pack up your gear.
Yeah.
You're feeding your face. You're taking up space. We wish you weren't living with us. We're not happy you're here.
Where's the refrigerator?
Correct us if we're mistaken, but those are long-distance calls you're making. How long do you plan on taking advantage of us?
Hey,
We wish you weren't living with us. We wish you weren't living with us. We wish you weren't living with us. Get out of town.
Now!
Iceman Insights, Episode 11, Part 3. The Dirty D, Michael the Shocker Shockley, webmaster, senior writer for IcemanManiacs.com. All the hockey nonsense and needless tangents that you could ever cram into a one-hour hockey radio show here on WYIR.
One hour, give or take.
1 hour, yeah. Yeah, let's just say schedule 2 hours to listen to our one-hour talk show.
Yeah. As we begin our third segment and
it's still going strong.
Yeah.
We can do this all day. We got nowhere else to go.
Trust us. We really could.
The traffic's horrible with all the snow out there, so we might as well just talk hockey the whole time.
Yeah. Everybody's coming back from Christmas. We start our third segment with some Iceman trivia, which I just started out. I did this once just because it was an interesting piece of news, and then it kind of became a weekly thing. But
yeah,
I like it. I like
back when this show was a 45-minute show.
Yeah, now we added trivia, and we're up to an hour plus every week. I just like trying to stump you. All right, this week's Iceman trivia. In three seasons at Swander, the two AHA seasons and one season in the CHL, the Iceman only had one shutout victory at home. Can you name the goaltender in that game?
I have a guess, but I can't remember his name. But I can describe him enough to get the guess.
Okay.
He was the goalie in the CHL, our number one goalie, and he was from the Maine Black Bears.
I don't remember what.
That's obviously
what
not
college
the right
he
answer.
Went to.
Is that him?
I don't remember who went to Maine. Boy, now you're gonna have to look this up online. Aren't
yes,
you?
I am. You got that Jeopardy music queued up?
Let's pause the show.
So my guess is indeed Matt Lundin, formerly of the Maine Black Bears.
With the assistance of the worldwide internet, you are correct.
Yes!
It was Matt Lundin.
2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, you're on a roll, sort of. Matt made 31 saves in a 1-0 win over the old Bloomington Prairie Thunder. And it was actually the last ever Iceman game at Swander on March 26, 2011. It was the last chance we had to get a home shutout, and we delivered.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was that late in the season.
Yeah, it was the very last game ever at Swander. So, yeah, we just barely got in under the wire with our first shutout. Otherwise, it wouldn't happen. So, yeah, 2 for 2. Well, you're 2 for the last 2.
2 for the last 2.
Sort of. Well, I'll give you credit for this one, I guess.
What? I had it all described right.
Yeah.
I just forgot his name.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah,
I guess.
I understand.
That wouldn't count on Jeopardy. But
I'll take partial credit. Well, come on, Alex. I described the whole thing.
But it wasn't in the form of a question.
Yeah. Who is that goalie from the first season that started, that came in from the Maine Black Bears, that Brian Ball had a crush on?
Yeah.
That's my answer.
That's your answer.
Courier and Press. After a one-week hiatus from the show, they're back.
We're back to talking about the Courier and Press. Not by our own choosing, but because it became an issue again on the Asylum. The Iceman did get full coverage for Friday's game. It was a big story, front page, above the fold. Jonathan Lintner was there again. Saturday, there was no one there. And we had said before that they were going to have someone at every game in December except for one. And Saturday was that one, because they had a couple people that were on vacation, so they just didn't have bodies in order to cover it. Now, they did give us a brief in the briefs, which is still something at least. But because we won on Saturday, didn't get coverage, and we lost on Friday and did get coverage, the
complaining
the conspiracy came back.
Theory again.
Not so much necessarily about the conspiracy theory, just general complaining about not having a story for Saturday. So just to clarify, yes, Saturday was the one game this month that we knew ahead of time we were not going to have someone there. So it was not surprising. Just like we've said before, continue reading when they have the stories, read them. When they offer the ability to comment, because that's the type of stuff that will move needles and make them realize that, yes, the Icemen deserve more coverage. So, again, no conspiracy. Hopefully we will indeed have coverage for the remaining home games this month. Saturday was just one of those deals. Moving on to better more happy subjects. Just a few other little quick things. Want to say congratulations to Brad Perkins.
Oh, now that you said his name, he's now woken up as he listens to the broadcast.
Yes. He did indeed win the ECHL's 25th anniversary contest, so he will be taking a trip out to the All-Star Game in Loveland, Colorado on the ECHL's dime, so that's pretty cool. Well-deserving.
I never had a doubt.
You thought he would...
Yeah, I knew.
Well, I figured he would as long as it was legit. I got worried when they started buying votes for Stockton, but thankfully that got corrected. So
never concerned.
So congratulations to Mr. Perkins. Well-deserved. Enjoy the trip. Represent Evansville well.
One of my favorite amusement park Facebook comments is from Brad Perkins this year when he said, "I love the format of your show. Blah, 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 Brad Perkins. Blah, 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 Brad Perkins. Blah, 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 Brad Perkins."
Yeah. I think that's probably how a lot of people hear this, though. They hear blah, blah, blah. Like Kevin Ziegler, for instance. It's blah, 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 Kevinsville. Blah, blah, blah.
We need to, speaking of redactions and everything else, we totally, this show is built on gross exaggeration and pretty much blatantly lies with enough facts to keep it entertaining, but we totally screwed up Kevinsville, so that was just horrible.
Yes.
He is not in Section 120.
No.
He's in Section 102.
Correct.
Which, they're relatively close, and there's the right numbers, but that's just poorly done on our parts, my part mostly, and he has nothing to do with the wave.
Correct.
So that I would like to blame a source on that, but the source is me, so either way I'm getting blamed. So
throwing yourself
Kevinsville Section 102, fantastic fan. He said he's in the third row unless no one's sitting on the glass,
and then
he moves
down
up. So which I don't know about you. No, you don't, because you're working, but yeah, I buy the cheapest ticket I can get, and I sit wherever I can.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of sitting down on the glass. I know you get the crunch of the glass when there's a hit right in front of you and it's up close, but I like you. I like sitting up higher to where you can actually see the plays develop, because hockey's so much about the flow of the game, and when you're up close, you can't see that, especially if you're sitting – if you're in that front row on one of the sides, you can't see the other end at all because of the way the glass is, and it – you know, messes with your field of vision. So I'm like you. I like to sit up high. But for, you know, some people like to sit on the glass and whatever floats your boat, I guess.
Definitely.
But yeah, we do need to apologize to Kevin. So we corrected our Kevinsville. Also,
yes.
I think we briefly mentioned that Kevinsville was somehow tied into the asylum annex down there at that end of the ice. I got a correction also. The asylum annex, quote unquote, is Section 121. That's where Jacob Franklin and C.J. Jones and Eric Titzer and those folks sit. And they started a lot of the chants, but they also deny having anything to do with the wave. So I think we can now say that it's not any of the good fans who start the wave. It's the idiots who come and get bored, so they decide the wave is the way to keep themselves entertained.
So what we're saying is podcast number 110, or number 10, just delete it. there's no accuracy in it at all.
At least not in that segment of it. We got a few other things right.
We did. I did.
You got the trivia right last week.
That
so.
Is true. We can't. And I said that I felt that Crom would go with Dayton both games, which he would have done, minus the injury. So
you know, even a broken clock is right twice a day.
That's the story of my life.
So speaking of throwing you under the bus, I also have to.
Yes.
I got to mention this. So we recorded the show last week, as we do every week. We always record this a little early. At the time of this recording is our catchphrase. We record the show. Comes time to air it on Wednesday. You start it. You get about an hour in, give or take. There's one more block of stuff that we were going to talk about left. And mid-sentence, mid-sentence, my voice stops, and you come on the air and say, "All right, we're going to pause Shocker and talk to Brian Patafi live." I come in here every week. I have all these notes to prepare that make you look good. And what do you do to thank me? You preempt me.
That was horrible. And I was actually trying to listen to the show, but I couldn't find the notes because I'd already taken them upstairs to my office. So I didn't know where we were in the broadcast, but I was trying to find a topic point to change on.
Uh-huh.
But you got Patafi, and he's just Brian Kilroy, blah 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 blah, and he's just, you know, just talking hockey and nonsense and everything else. And I finally just And he's like, I got to go. I got to get to Steven Rickard's show. And so I knew I was either going to lose Patafi or have to preempt you.
You'd rather preempt me.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
See, and also in my defense, remember when we first talked about this and we were worried about filling 15 or 20 minutes?
Yeah.
And now the amusement park show, it's built its own format. It's 30 to 45 minutes A-League, 15 minutes B-League, which takes us to the 1 o'clock hour. Iceman Insight slotted 1 p.m. to 2 p.m.
Give or take.
So, well, it was slotted for 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Right. When it's 2:20 and Brian Patafi's been sitting around for 20 minutes and he's got work to do, something's got
to
give.
You got to tell him to adjust his schedule and show up at 2:30 every week.
Dude, yeah. I tried, but he's got too much stuff going on in the afternoon, so he has to come in at 2. So
maybe we're going to have to move this up.
And then depending whether Rickard gets up here or not with all the snow that we have, this may be preempted once again.
Yeah, we'll see. It'll eventually get on, but I guess that gives us an opportunity to plug it. If this gets broken up into bits and pieces, or if for some reason it doesn't all play, which I don't think that's ever going to happen. You'll still play it eventually.
Oh, yeah. The show goes 3.5 hours. It'll get played.
Oh, well, yeah. But if you want to hear it uninterrupted, you can always go to IcemanManiacs.com. For those who listen over the air, these are always available as a free downloadable podcast on IcemanManiacs.com. Every episode we've ever done, where it started out at like 32 minutes the first week, and it's grown every week to where now it's about 1 hour and 15 every week. And I think this week's going to break the record. So I guess that's our cue to move on.
All right.
You think so?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Homestand, 1-1 so far. We got 4 more games to go. We'll see. You would think a lot of practice time, but I don't know how much Crom's going to practice
with the holidays.
But I do know that they played last Friday night, and what did I do? I was walking around with I had to stay after the game because we did the midget travel, right. Evansville midget travel versus Evansville Bantam travel. And after the game, I went into the locker room, and Jeff, they call him Smoke, the equipment manager, was still in there, and he was getting everything ready. And I looked in the locker room, like, are you guys practicing in the morning? So Crom put them through the paces Saturday morning before the Saturday afternoon game.
Well, after the way they played Friday, they deserved it.
But don't ever think that these guys are not working.
Speaking of Smoke, we need to talk to him and get a blue shell for Dayton's.
Already ordered.
Yeah. Are they really?
Yeah, I talked to him about it. I was joking. I said, you just keep, what's your love affair with red goalie pants? And he laughed about it. He said, I've got a shell on order, or new pants on order, actually.
Oh.
He said he didn't want to go through they knew York was coming in for 5-6 games total. It was scheduled that way, so he wasn't going to waste Iceman money or anything else for somebody that was just getting a cup of coffee here down at the Wired Coffee Shop, 4th Street, in between Sycamore and Vine. But he did say that he was getting new pants. However, Dayton comes down, he's got a red stick, he's got red leg pads, so the pants will be changed, but none of the rest of the equipment.
Yeah, those leg pads are wow.
Yeah.
We thought York's pants were bright. Those,
yep.
You don't even notice Dayton's pants because the leg pads are incredibly red.
And when you're talking $1,200 minimum for a new pair of leg pads, Icemen are not going to foot that bill anytime
soon.
Just
get like duct tape or a black Sharpie or something. We got to do something. Those things are hideous.
Well, I don't know. They're.
I think we're stuck with them.
Yeah, we are.
So, anyway, the upcoming games, that's where we started with this. We started talking about goalie pads.
Yeah. It's amazing how
that's how this show just grows every week.
How can anyone take us seriously?
I don't know. I don't even think we should take ourselves seriously.
All right, I'm attempting to read the schedule hill. Elmira. Is it Elmira? I haven't even heard of this team before.
Yes.
Obviously, their first time we've played them this season.
Correct.
And then Cincinnati, we know all about them. That should be just a absolute fisticuff, horrendous.
I'm enjoying
meat
the rivalry with them.
And then already saw on the big down on Green River where they have the digital billboard, already promoting the Gwinnett game, 7:15 New Year's Eve, $13 tickets available. So
really,
there are some discounted tickets for the game.
Fancy.
So, and the Detroit Red Wings for many years have done a New Year's Eve game, and it's always. I really like that tradition. I love New Year's Eve hockey. So.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, this is the season-long six-game homestand continues. Six We actually have six games before our next show, since we're not doing a show next week.
That is true.
And out of those six, five of them are at home. Yeah, Elmira on Friday, which it is the Jackals' first visit to Evansville. And then Cincinnati Saturday, Monday, the New Year's Eve game against Gwinnett. That is actually the last time Gwinnett comes here this season, so it'll be our last time of seeing them. And then the following weekend, Friday, January 4th, the Orlando Solar Bears come to town. It's the only time they come to town this year, and that will be the return of Dale Mahovsky and Dan Ginder.
It will be the return of linesman Maddie Spaeth.
Man crush!
Already got the plans in the works.
Does it involve sleeping on your couch?
There's always that hope.
So, Friday the 4th against Orlando, Saturday, January 5th, Kalamazoo. That's the only road game out of the next six. We'll see if there's any more fisticuffs involving Matt Jens after his hip check. That is actually game number 36, so that will officially be the halfway mark of the season. And then the second half of the season starts on Sunday, January 6th at home against Cincinnati. That's a 5 o'clock start. That's another Subway family night with you get a ticket, soda, popcorn, and a T-shirt for cheap. I believe it's $12. It was originally announced as $12. I was confused, though, because this past Saturday was also a Subway family night, and the team was saying that it was $17.50 for that deal.
Mm.
I don't know if they upped the price just because it was a Saturday.
Maybe.
And the Sundays are still $12 or what. But in any case, it's still a good deal. Even at $17.50, it's still a good deal. So Subway family night, Sunday, January 6th. And also, supposedly, that is the night that Tony Twist will be in attendance.
Tony Twist.
Longtime NHL tough guy and legitimately one of the most feared fighters in the history of hockey. You talk to enforcers, you read books that quote enforcers, and Tony Twist is right up there as one of the guys that nobody ever really wanted to fight because it was a battle.
Yeah, he was a true heavyweight.
Yeah. Yeah, he was one of those, you know, the unstoppable force and the immovable object, but he was both.
Yeah. I want to go back to that Friday, January 4th Matt Spaeth game versus the Orlando Solar Bears.
The Matt Spaeth game. Everybody mark it on your calendars that way. It's the Matt Spaeth game.
I am offering an Iceman Insights amnesty. So we kind of threw some people under the bus. We didn't have any names because I couldn't remember them. But a couple of people, maybe just one person, made comments about, I wish we had Dan Ginder still because he scored a goal when we lost in overtime. So here is your Iceman Insights amnesty from now until 7:15, Friday, January 4th. You get to choose whether you want Dan Ginder and Dale Mahovsky, that we should have never traded them, or whether you want Kenny Baker. Is it Kevin?
Kevin Baker.
I thought he was the same guy that played R2-D2.
No.
Oh.
Kevin Baker.
Kevin Baker. So, well, that stinks.
Well, I man, already now had... you're all confused. You don't know if you want Kenny Baker or Kevin Baker. Forget about Gabriel.
I want them put together. I was thinking like Kenny Baker, R2-D2, Star Wars night next year. That would have been fantastic. But anyways, Kevin Baker. So, if take your pick right now. You've got 2 weeks, week
until
and a half.
Until the puck drops for that
until
game.
The puck drops, put it on, message me on Facebook, text me if you got my number. If you want Shocker's number, email me and I'll give it to you. or put it on the Maniacs Asylum, watched by the warden, Chris Phillips. But put it on there which way you prefer. Did Crom do the right thing by getting Kevin Baker, or should he have held on to Dan Ginder and Dale Mahovsky? But after that puck drops, 7:15,
it's over.
That's it.
You got to pick your side.
That's right.
Stick to it.
That's the way it works around here. It's accountability sports talk radio.
Yeah. And then if you're wrong, we throw you under the bus.
Heck yeah.
And if we're wrong, we throw us under the bus.
Yeah, which is more than likely going to happen.
Yeah.
But for myself, I'm sticking with Kevin Baker. And again,
I'm with you.
I really like Dale Mahovsky. I have nothing against Dan Ginder. It just didn't work.
Yeah. Sometimes you just got to make a change. And that's one of those cases where, you know, like I said, when it happened, it could be one of those deals that ends up benefiting both teams. And so far, Baker's been pretty decent for us, and Gender's been okay for them. Mahovsky hasn't done very well, but you never know what situation they're putting them in either. You know, Ginder is a top scoring line type of player. Mahovsky is a second or third line PK kind of guy, and you don't know. We haven't seen him, so we don't know how they're using them. If Mahovsky's being used as a 10th forward, that would explain why he's not on the score sheet. So, well, I guess we'll see on January 4th. We'll get a little bit better of an idea of that'll be something to look for in that game, is to see how those two are being used and whether or not they're actually being put in a position to succeed, or if it's just a case of, well, we've got them, we got to play them, but we don't really know what to do with them.
Any final thoughts?
Just wanted to reiterate, we will not do a show next week on January 2nd. The Dirty D will be traveling on the road. We will return the week after that on Wednesday, January 9th, and then we'll move forward on Wednesdays as per usual.
We're just going to schedule 2-hour block for that one week off.
That's going to be a long show.
Yeah, and it's going to be a long time for us not to yap our mouths, so yeah. I'm sure there'll be a lot of pent-up bull crap that needs to come out.
Yeah, that should be our new phrase. A lot of pent-up bull crap that needs to come out. It's got to come out somewhere, right?
Yep, that's why we have radio.
Yeah, so no show next week. We will return on Wednesday the 9th. Just want to say hope everyone had a great Christmas. Today, Wednesday the 26th, is Boxing Day in Canada. So to all of our Canadian friends and listeners, happy Boxing Day. Also, since we won't have a show next week, everybody have a happy and safe New Year. If you do go to the Iceman game on New Year's Eve, be safe. If you drink, do so in moderation and don't drink and drive and, you know, all that.
Taxis and everything
else. Call Dave's Taxi. Yes. Tommy Mason will tell you how.
Is that sponsorship not the best?
Yeah.
How they, just fantastic.
Yeah. I enjoyed on Friday how Tommy was like, you know, the world was going to end, but we were all saved by Dave from Dave's Taxi.
So, fantastic.
Yeah. So, yeah, everybody have a happy, safe New Year. Come back in one piece. If you want to make a resolution, do you have any New Year's resolutions?
I haven't figured it out. I love New Year's resolutions. I do one every year. Yep. And I am super close to actually achieving one. New Year's resolution last year, read through the entire Bible in 1 year.
Really?
And I am super, super duper close. I do have to make up a couple of chapters, so which I'm going to be doing as soon as this show's over.
You do realize it doesn't stop at the end of Genesis, right?
Yes.
Oh. Hey,
I have plugged through it, man. I am very proud of
me. Where are
you?
How far in?
Where am I? I'm finishing up Proverbs, and all I have left is Ecclesiastes and Song of Solomon.
So you're reading it out of order.
I did 4 chapters a day, started 2 in Genesis and 2 in the New Testament.
Ah.
And then when I ran out of the New Testament, then I split the Old Testament. You read through the history of Kings and Chronicles, and then I started with Isaiah and read through the prophets at the end of the book. So, and it worked out pretty good. So,
does it make as much sense out of order like
it
this?
Does. It's... Yeah,
it's not exactly a chronological story.
Yeah, so it works out. And just for those of us who have ever read Numbers, which is all the lineage of the tribe of Israel through the ancient times, it's some of the driest, horriblest stuff you've ever read. And I didn't want to get caught with 4 chapters a day of and Amnadab begat Jonabab begat and just read.
Saying if they ever turned the entire Bible into a movie, that would be left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, in a heartbeat.
Gotcha.
In a heartbeat. But if it was done by Peter Jackson, he would just add scenes that have nothing to do with the story. But that's a little Lord of the Rings gripe of mine. What the heck are we talking about? Oh, New Year's resolutions.
Yeah. You wanted to read the entire Bible, okay?
Yeah, and
that was this year. What about next year?
Next year, I haven't been motivated yet quite to think of what it is. Usually something comes to me. I got to get through Christmas first. Well, dang it.
You just got through Christmas.
I just got through Christmas. So in the next weekend here, something will pop in my mind to do. So,
I'm not a resolution guy. I never have done it. I'm sure... For some people, if it gives you a goal to shoot for and something, some sort of direction, cool. Whatever floats your boat, but it's just not my thing. I've never done it, so I don't have any New Year's resolutions. Minus to, how about this? My New Year's resolution is to somehow see an NHL game sometime soon.
Yeah.
To have them return so that there's actually NHL hockey to watch.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Hopefully my resolution will come true at least by September or October. I don't think it's going to come true in the spring.
Yeah. No, yeah. Hopefully by the end of the year. You're listening to Iceman Insights. He is Michael Shockley, senior writer, webmaster, and vice president of Offbeat Shenanigans here from IcemanManiacs.com, and you've been listening to the show, as you always do, on the Amusement Park 96.9 FM, WYIR, The Music Bomb.
We'll see you on the radio.
The puck is in, the home team wins the good old hockey game.